his father. So ends the story of Alexander and Aristobulus. Chapter 5. Herod's murder of his heir and death. Antipater, now undisputed heir, had called down on his own head the utter loathing of the nation. For everyone knew that all the slanders directed against his brothers had originated with him. And he was filled with secret but terrible fear when he saw the dead men's children growing up. Glaphyra had borne Alexander two sons, Tigranes and Alexander. Bernice, Salome's daughter, had borne Aristobulus three sons, Herod, Agrippa, and Aristobulus, and two daughters, Herodias and Mariamne. Herod sent Glaphyra back to Cappadocia with her dowry after the execution of Alexander. Aristobulus's widow, Bernice, he married to the brother of Antipater's mother. It was to placate the hostility of Salome that Antipater arranged this marriage. He tried also to get round Pheroras with gifts and other attentions, and round Caesar's friends by sending large monies to Rome. Saturninus and his staff in Syria all received more than enough of his presents. But his gifts made him the more hated, as it was obvious they were not spontaneous expressions of generosity, but insurances against foreseen dangers. The result was that while the recipients liked him no better than before, those to whom he gave nothing became more bitter enemies. Yet he made his largesse daily more lavish, as he saw the king negating his efforts by taking care of the orphans, and showing his remorse for the murder of his sons by his tenderness towards their little ones. One day Herod assembled his counselors and gentlemen, set the children before them, and with brimming eyes began, "The fathers of these children were snatched from me by some malignant spirit. They themselves are commanded to my care, both by natural ties and by pity for their orphanhood. I will try, though I have been most unfortunate as a father, at any rate to show myself a more devoted grandfather, and when I die, to leave in charge of them those most dear to me. I betroth your daughter, Pheroras, to the elder of Alexander's two boys, and so make you automatically his guardian. And to your son, Antipater, I give Aristobulus's daughter, so that you will become father to the orphan girl. Her sister, my own Herod, shall have, since on his mother's side he had a high priest for grandfather. Let my wishes be carried out in this way, and let no one who cares for me go against them. I pray God to seal these unions to the good of my kingdom and of my descendants, and to look with gentler eyes on these little children here than he ever looked on their fathers." And now the tears flowed faster, and he joined the children's hands. Then, after warmly embracing each in turn, he dismissed the gathering. His decision struck a sudden chill into Antipater, who made no attempt to hide his mortification. He felt that the honour shown by his father to the orphans meant the end of his hopes, and that his prospects of succession would again be in danger if not only Archelaus, but Pheroras, a tetrarch, supported Alexander's heirs. He thought of the nation's hatred for himself and compassion for the orphans, of the devotion the Jews had felt for his brothers while they lived, and their tender memories of them now that, thanks to him, they were dead. So he made up his mind, by fair means or foul, to break these betrothals. He was afraid to try any tricks on a father so difficult and so prone to suspicion, so he took the bull by the horns and asked him directly not to rob him of the honour already conferred, or to give the name of king to him, the power to others. He would never be in control if, with Archelaus as his grandfather, Alexander's son should also have Pheroras as his father-in-law. As the royal family was so large, would he please reconsider the proposed marriages? The king, indeed, had 9 wives and children by 7 of them. Antipater himself was the son of Doris, Herod of Mariame, the high priest's daughter. Antipas and Archelaus of Malthasae, the Samaritan, their sister Olympias being married to Herod's nephew Joseph. By Cleopatra of Jerusalem he had Herod and Philip, and by Pallas Phasile. He had other daughters, Roxanne and Salome, the first by Phaedra, the second by Elpis. 2 wives were childless, a cousin and a niece. Apart from these, there were the 2 sisters of Alexander and Aristobulus, children of Mariame. The family being of such exceptional size, Antipater asked for the marriage arrangements to be reconsidered. On realizing how Antipater regarded the orphans, the king was extremely angry, and it flashed across his mind that the murdered men might also be victims of Antipater's slanders. So for the moment he made a long and bitter reply, and sent the fellow packing. Later, however, he succumbed to his flatteries, and altered the arrangements, marrying Aristobulus's daughter to Antipater himself, and Pheroras's daughter to his son. How effective was his flattery in this instance can be seen from Salome's failure in a like case. She was Herod's sister, and was backed by Caesar's wife Julia in her repeated requests to marry the Arab Silius. But Herod swore he would count her his worst enemy if she did not abandon this ambition, and ended by marrying her against her will to Alexus, one of his gentlemen, and one of her daughters to Alexus's son, the other to Antipater's mother's brother. Of his own daughters by Mariame, one wedded his sister's son Antipater, one his brother's son Phasile. Having cut off the orphan's hopes and arranged the marriages for his personal benefit, Antipater felt that his own hopes were safely in port, and, as confident now as he was wicked, became insufferable. To overcome the detestation in which he was universally held was beyond him, so he relied on terror to maintain his security. He was aided by Pheroras, who had no doubt now that he would be king. There was, too, a group of women who stirred up fresh troubles at court. Pheroras's wife, with the cooperation of her mother and sister, and of Antipater's mother, began to throw her weight about in the palace, even daring to affront 2 of the king's daughters, making him thoroughly disgusted, though his aversion did not prevent their tyrannizing the rest. The only one who stood up to this conspiracy was Salome, who denounced the gang to the king as a danger to himself. Informed of this denunciation and of Herod's displeasure, they left off meeting openly and exchanging friendly greetings, and instead pretended to quarrel with each other in the king's hearing. Antipater joined in the pretense by publicly disagreeing with Pheroras. But they held secret meetings and caroused in the night, the watch kept over them only serving to strengthen the conspiracy. But every detail of their doings was known to Salome and duly passed on to Herod. The king blazed with anger, especially against Pheroras's wife, whom Salome accused most vehemently. He convened a meeting of his counselors and gentlemen, and laid a great many things to the woman's charge, especially the affront to his daughters, accusing her also of paying money to the Pharisees to spite him, and turning his brothers against him by the use of powerful drugs. Finally, he turned to Pheroras and told him he must choose one or the other, his brother or his wife. When Pheroras replied that he would die rather than give up his wife, Herod, at a loss, went off to Antipater and forbade him to hold any converse with Pheroras, his wife, or anyone connected with her. Antipater conformed with this command in public, but in secret he spent the night with them. Afraid, however, of Salome's watchful eye, he arranged through friends in Italy to visit Rome. They wrote that Antipater ought in the near future to be sent to Caesar, and, without hesitation, Herod sent him off with a splendid retinue, a vast sum of money, and his will, which named Antipater as the next king, and as Antipater's successor, Herod, son of Mariamne, the high priest's daughter. To Rome sailed also Silius the Arab, in disregard of Caesar's commands, and with the intention of arguing against Antipater the case about which he had previously been arraigned by Nicolaus. There was also a serious dispute between him and Aretas, his own king, as he had executed a number of his friends, among them Soemus, the most powerful man in Petra. By a heavy bribe he won over Phabatus, Caesar's treasurer, using his help against Herod too. But Herod, by a still heavier bribe, detached him from Silius, and attempted, with his aid, to extract from that rogue the money Caesar had ordered him to pay. Silius would not pay a penny, and even accused Phabatus to Caesar, saying his treasurer treasured not his interests but Herod's. Furious at this, and still high in Herod's favor, Phabatus betrayed Silius's secrets, telling the king that Silius had bought the services of his bodyguard Corinthus, on whom he must keep an eye. As Corinthus, though brought up in his kingdom, was by birth an Arab, the king took the hint, and immediately arrested both him and two other Arabs found with him, one a friend of Silius, and the other a tribal chief. Under torture, they admitted that Corinthus had given them heavy bribes to murder Herod. After further examination by Saturninus, governor of Syria, they were sent under escort to Rome. Herod maintained his relentless pressure on Pheroras to divorce his wife, but could find no means of punishing the woman, many as were his motives for hating her, till he lost his temper and banished her, along with her brother. Pheroras swallowed the insult and went off to his tetrarchy, swearing that the only end to his exile would be the death of Herod. Never while he lived would he go back to him. He did not return, even when his brother was sick, despite the most pressing invitation, for Herod wanted to leave him certain instructions, believing himself on the point of death. But he unexpectedly recovered, and soon afterwards Pheroras fell sick. Herod showed himself less adamant. He went to him and looked after him sympathetically, but he could not master the sickness, and after a few days Pheroras died. Herod had loved him till his dying day, but for all that it was rumored that he had poisoned him. However, he conveyed the body to Jerusalem, ordered prolonged mourning by the whole nation, and honored him with the most magnificent funeral. Such was the end that came to one of the murderers of Alexander and Aristobulus. But arising out of Pheroras's death, retribution was at last finding the true author of that crime. Some of the dead man's freedmen came in a dejected state to the king, and declared that his brother had been deliberately poisoned. His wife had brought him a most unusual dish, and as soon as he had eaten it, he had been taken ill. 2 days earlier, her mother and sister had called in an Arab woman with a knowledge of drugs to prepare a love potion for Pheroras. Instead, she had given him deadly poison at the instance of Silius, to whom she was known. Plagued with suspicions of every kind, the king put the maidservants and several freed women to the torture. One of them, in her agony, cried out, "May God, the ruler of heaven and earth, visit our sufferings on their author, Antipater's mother." Seizing on this hint, the king went still further in his search for the truth. The woman disclosed the friendship of Antipater's mother with Pheroras and his womenfolk, and their surreptitious meetings. She told how Pheroras and Antipater, after returning from the king, drank with them all night, rigidly excluding every servant, whether man or woman. It was one of the free women who gave this information. The slave girls Herod tortured one at a time. Their evidence in every case tallied with that already given, with the addition that it was by agreement that Antipater had gone off to Rome, Pheroras to Perea. For they had said again and again that having disposed of Alexander and Aristobulus, Herod would be after them and their wives. After killing Mariamne and her sons, he would spare no one, so it was better to put as many miles as possible between them and the beast. Again, Antipater had often grumbled to his mother that he was grey-haired already, while his father got daily younger. As likely as not, he would die without ever actually being king. When his father died, if he ever did, his enjoyment of the succession would be terribly short. And those Hydra heads were shooting up, the sons of Aristobulus and Alexander. He had been robbed by his father of his hopes for his children, as the person nominated to succeed him when he died was not to be one of his own sons, but Mariamne's, Herod. In that respect, anyway, the king must be a complete dotard, if he imagined that in this matter his will would be carried out. He himself would see that none of the family survived. Hating his children more than any father had ever done, Herod hated his brother far more. Only a day or two ago he had given him, Antipater, 100 talents to hold no converse with Pheroras. When Pheroras asked, "What harm were we doing him?" he himself had replied, "I only wish he would strip us of everything and leave us to live naked. But there is no way to escape such a murderous beast who will not even let us show affection openly. Now we shall have to meet in secret. We can do it openly if ever we have the arms and spirits of men." To these disclosures, wrung from them by the rack, they added that Pheroras had planned to fly with them to Petra. Herod believed every word because of the 100 talents which he had mentioned to nobody but Antipater. His anger descended first on Doris, Antipater's mother. He stripped her of all the adornments he had lavished on her at fantastic expense and sent her packing a second time. Pheroras's womenfolk he made as comfortable as he could after their ordeal, having no further quarrel with them. But he was in constant terror and blazed upon the tiniest suspicion, dragging many guiltless persons off to torture for fear of missing any of the guilty. He now turned to the Samaritan Antipater, Antipater's chief executive. Putting him on the rack, he found out that Antipater had sent one of his companions to Egypt for a noxious drug meant for him. Antipholus had handed it to Theudion, Antipater's uncle, who had passed it on to Pheroras, Pheroras being required by Antipater to assassinate Herod while he himself was at Rome out of reach of suspicion, and Pheroras had put the drug in his wife's hands. The king sent for her and commanded her to fetch that very moment what she had received. She went out as if to fetch it, but threw herself from the roof to forestall inquisition by the king's torturer. However, by the providence of God, who, it would seem, was resolved to punish Antipater, she did not fall on her head, but on other parts of her body, and survived. She was taken to the king, who had her revived, as she was unconscious after her fall, and pressed her for the explanation, swearing that if she told the truth, she would be immune from any punishment, but if she held anything back, he would rack her to pieces and leave nothing for burial. After a brief hesitation, the woman answered, "Well, why should I go on keeping these secrets now Pheroras is dead? To save Antipater, who has ruined us all? Listen, Your Majesty, and may God listen to and witness the truth of my words, for there is no deceiving him. When Pheroras was dying, and you sat beside him in tears, he called me to him and whispered, 'I have been badly mistaken, my dear, about my brother's attitude to me. He loves me like this, and yet I hated him, and planned to kill a man who is so terribly distressed about me, even before my death. I am only receiving what I deserve for my disloyalty. You go and fetch the drug you are keeping to poison him with, that Antipater left with us, and destroy it at once, before my eyes, for fear I go to Hades with a devil on my back. Thus bidden, I fetched it and emptied most of it into the fire before his eyes, but kept a little for myself in case of emergency, and because I was afraid of you. So saying, she produced the box, containing very little indeed of the poison. The king then turned his tortures against Antipholus's mother and brother, who both admitted that he had fetched the box from Egypt, and stated that he had obtained the drug from a brother who practiced medicine in Alexandria. The ghosts of Alexander and Aristobulus were prowling around the whole palace, ferreting out hidden things and bringing them to light, and dragging those most remote from suspicion before the Inquisitor. Even the high priest's daughter, Mariamne, was found to be privy to the conspiracy. Torture extracted this information from her brothers. The king punished the mother's criminal intention through her son. The name of her Herod, who was to succeed Antipater, was blotted out of his father's will. On top of this, Bathyllus came under inquisition and clenched the evidence of Antipater's conspiracy. A freedman of Antipater, he brought another concoction, a noxious compound of the poison of asps and the secretions of other reptiles, so that if the first drug proved ineffectual, Pheroras and his wife should be armed with this weapon against the king. As a sideline to the intended attack on the father, he brought letters forged by Antipater to incriminate his brothers Archelaus and Philip, sons of the king at school in Rome, now adolescent and proud-spirited. Determined to nip in the bud this growing danger to his hopes, Antipater forged incriminating letters in the names of their friends in Rome, and bribed others to write that they regularly criticized their father, openly denouncing the fate of Alexander and Aristobulus, and protesting against their own recall, for their father had already sent for them, and this was the chief cause of Antipater's alarm. Even before his absence from the country, while still in Judea, he had paid for similar incriminating letters to be written in Rome, and to avoid suspicion, had gone to his father on purpose to excuse his brother's conduct, maintaining that some of the things were untrue and others merely boyish indiscretions. Having disbursed vast sums to the writers of these incriminating letters, his task now was to cover up his tracks. So he bought up costly wardrobes, elaborate tapestries, cups of silver and gold, and many other valuables in order that his huge expenditure under these heads might conceal the more dubious items. His accounts showed outgoings totaling 200 talents, attributed mostly to his legal battle with Silius. All his rascalities, however small, had come to light, with the major crime now that all the tortures cried aloud, "Parricide," and the letters, "Fratricide," a second time. Yet no one arriving in Rome told him what had happened in Judea, though between the discovery of his guilt and his homecoming 7 months went by. So great was the detestation with which all regarded him. Perhaps, too, the mouths of those prepared to tell him were stopped by the ghosts of his murdered brothers. Anyway, he wrote from Rome announcing the good news of his imminent arrival and of the honour paid him by Caesar at his final interview. Itching to lay hands on this murderous scoundrel, and afraid of his being forewarned and on the lookout, the king replied in a letter which suppressed his real feelings, and, with much show of affection, urged him to hurry home. If he came quickly, Herod would say no more about his mother's misdoings, for Antipater was now aware of her banishment from the court. He had earlier received at Tarentum a letter describing Pheroras's death, and had made a great show of grief, which much impressed those who thought it was for his uncle. It is more likely that he was upset by the failure of the conspiracy, and was weeping not for Pheroras, but for his tool, and he was already assailed by terror of what he had done. Perhaps the poison had been discovered. Now, when he received in Cilicia the letter from his father mentioned above, he pushed on without delay. But as he sailed into Calendaris, he was overcome by the thought of his mother's fate, his unaided soul giving him a premonition of disaster. The more far-seeing of his gentlemen advised him not to put himself in his father's power till he knew for certain the grounds of his mother's banishment. They were afraid there might be something attached to the charges against her. The less prudent, more anxious to see their own country again than interested in Antipater's welfare, urged him to push on, and not by lingering to give his father an excuse for base suspicion, and his enemies a handle for slander. Even if there had been a movement against him, it was due to his absence. No one would have dared if he had been there. It was ridiculous to let doubtful suspicions deprive him of unmistakable benefits, and not to put himself as soon as possible in his father's hands to take over the kingdom which depended on him alone. It was to these advisers that Antipater, guided by his evil genius, listened.